If you're still in place by lunch, they do take you to the Sony commissary where you may see such celebrities as, I don't know, Seth Rogen or George Clooney. Alex doesn't eat there. You see George Clooney, not when I was there, of course, or James DeMarco, right? He's got a movie going on the set somewhere in the sunny lot, and he's occasionally in there. But I saw no one famous.
Is James DeMarco a real guy, or is that just Glenn making up a name?
What's his name? Who's the Spider-Man, Spider-Man guy? What's the guy's name?
James Franco?
James Franco.
See,
I've
systematically purged my mind of knowledge.
Gus Van Zandt.
Excuse me, sir. Are you James DeMarco?
That's right.
I'm a big fan of your movie with the guy.
I loved you in Cop Rock.
Spider-Man. You're that goblin. You're that goblin guy, right?
Yeah, the goblin guy in The Adventures of Peter Spider-Man.
Peter Spider-Man, yeah. Attorney at law. Had this guy named, I'm not going to tell you his name because I'll get it wrong for sure. Roger Craig, let's say his name is. Maybe I'll look it up.
San Francisco Giants manager Roger Craig? San Francisco 49ers running back Roger Craig?
Exactly. All of those people. No, you know what? This is amazing. I got it right. His name is actually Roger Craig.
You see?
His name the is champion. Actually Roger Craig.
Correct.
Reigning champion, right, ladies and gentlemen. James well DeMarco, done. Everybody.
James DeMarco. Roger Craig.
You've made it a true incomparable daily double. Not even any Alex Trebek slash fic. Rule 34 says there has to be something like that.
Oh yeah, somewhere. It's Alex Trebek and Pat Sajak. It's the Merv Griffin connection.
Oh my God, that's
oddly enough, it was his wink that got me into his web of clues.
I love you, Alex. Don't forget to phrase that in the form of a question. What is I love you?
What is love, Alex?
I'm sorry. I was so quick to the buzzer, Alex. No, I liked that. But let me read how much I love you completely before you buzz in.
Let's spin the wheel and see what comes up.
Hey, Alex. Let's make this a true daily.
I'd like to buy an A. A. I'd like to buy an A.
This is the dirtiest game show podcast ever.
Oh, how much for that O, Alex?
I'll take Alex Trebek's underwear for $1,000.
It's Final Jeopardy. Oh,
Boston Rob.
Robin Amber.
You're wicked hot, Amber.
Sorry.
She's wicked hot.
Glenn's Boston Down syndrome victim, I think, was. Kind of threw me off for a minute.
Amber, she's smoking.
You're wicked hot.
She's smoking. I gotta say, one thing we didn't talk about in the episode proper though is it is amazing how clockwork it is. I mean, I know the production team has been together for a lot of the history, and people have been there 10, 20, or even, you know, like 29 years. But it is insane to go in and just watch this incredibly well-oiled machine. Go through its paces. They just boom, boom, boom. But they enjoy what they do. So, like, even the briefings, the stage manager comes out. He runs you through everything. The sound guy, like, everybody involved in every stage of it was absolutely delightful. And they just – it is like watching a stage show. It's like this is the 6,500th performance of Cats, and they actually aren't sick of the music yet. It's amazing.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like a good, pretty good gig. Pretty good job.
It's the job you want when you're in TV, something that lasts. That's for sure.
Now, Glenn, did you eventually, like, intentionally throw questions just so you could finally break the sexual tension between yourself and Alex and consummate that love that you've been communicating silently for three episodes?
I just had a smolder at him. That was the only thing I could do was smolder.
Do you miss the mustache, Glenn?
If he had
the mustache still, would you have been unable to control yourself?
I prefer a clean upper lip. Cleanly shaved.
Yeah, I prefer that in general, but in Alex Trebek, I do not.
It really did throw you. It throws you not to see it. It's like, oh, look, here's a picture of Abe Lincoln without the hat or the beard. What?
He looks so young. I mean, you would think, I know he's with makeup, but you know, you're at close distances. You're 2 feet away. You're 2 feet away from Alex Trebek. And he's just incredibly personable. The thing that's weird about the show, I'll tell you, here's the weirdest thing. It's like, you go down there, I came back and I'm like, did that really happen? Because being on the show is so much like watching the show. Like this, you know, it's a stage set and it's made, it's not green screen. I mean, it's made to look like the thing you see, and I've seen it a million times. So you go there and you're part of it. You're like, wow, this is really cool. And it's like, it doesn't, the memory of being in it is not that different from actually watching it. So it's slightly surreal too. You get back to your real life and you're like, oh, I guess I was on Jeopardy. How interesting.
You let Trebek get into your head. That's always the first mistake.
Yeah. I did have like flop sweat, came back and said flop sweat dreams about questions and boxes and answers. And oh my God. And the Jeopardy, good God, the think music, that's still in my head. I think it'll be in my head for months to come.
Greg Kinn standing over your shoulder.
They actually play it in the studio?
Yeah, although what was funny is the first game played, I played later in the day on the first day, and I was sitting there with the other contestants, and the game was over, and they were going to lead us back in the green room, and somebody turned to another contestant and said, did they play the final Jeopardy music? And we all looked at each other and were like, I don't know. And they have. They always play it in the studio. They do. It's timing. They raise it, the change is key midway through. It's 15 seconds. It changes key and repeats. And so when you're playing, this is another Bob Harris tip. When you're playing, if you're worried about time, there's no clock. You're listening to the music. You have to judge it. So there was one point I hear the key changed. I'm like, oh, I'd better write this thing down because I'm going to run out of time.
There was one more question I wanted to ask, by sense that we're like running out of time. Like, what is it from the perspective?
You're the one on the East Coast.
That's right.
No, I still got 2 hours worth of work before I go to bed. So it's like, no, I don't want to go into the office. Let me keep talking. But it's like, is there anything behind the podium that like you can see that other people can't? Like, is there a cup of water? Is there like a little card saying, if your touch tablet gives you the Windows startup screen, just be patient. It'll reboot.
It does
based
run
on Flash.
I'm sorry to say, purchased by Officer Mahoney.
The podiums run Windows XP. They had to reboot that when I was there. It was very sad. The Windows XP screen came up and everything. It was really, I mean, the touch tablets is like, it's ancient technology. So there is the little touch screen in front of you and there's speakers. So when there's audio clues, they can play right where you're at. And there's the touch pen, but they always laugh about it. They're like, the technology is like, I don't know, it's 15 years old or something that they're using for the touchscreen stuff. So it's really hard to write with it and whatever. And they give you – this has happened. They had problems in some show somewhere a few years ago, maybe a couple years ago. So they now – there's a Sharpie and a small piece of paper for Final Jeopardy. Wow. And they're like, if you start to answer and your pad malfunctions, just continue to answer on this. It will be counted. You can write the whole question or the part you didn't get through. It will be fine. Hasn't happened in a long time. If it does, don't stop. Don't say anything. Just continue to work. So they have this sort of like their backup is paper, just because, again, the fairness thing, they couldn't replay. It would be very, very difficult for them to replay Final Jeopardy. They would probably have to scratch it and invite everyone back and have like a whole technical glitch explained on the air, which would be horribly embarrassing. But I think it did happen once where someone said their pen didn't work and they had to wind up giving him a separate period of time and something to write on, and it was unclear whether it didn't work or not. So they're constantly like you check when you sign in, they check the buzzers before every commercial break, and so they're all working, and they're trying to get it technically perfect.
Well-oiled machine, yeah.
It is. It's just, I mean, the camera work, everything they do, they know how to do that show very, very, very well. And it shows.
It feels like at the end of the shuttle program, they've done this incredible thing so many times that every possible emergency, they've faced it and they know how to deal with it. So it's like, yes, three engines have shut down and there's a fuel leak, but we know that because this number is less than 31, we'll keep going to orbit. We're good.
Oh, I will tell you, there's one other secret we didn't talk about. I'll tell you briefly. Is just that, so they'll say, Alex will say, yes, that's right. Like, oh, no, I'm sorry. No, that actually was incorrect. Anyone else? That can be a gap of anywhere from 0 seconds to many, many minutes. Many, many minutes. And I didn't see an egregious example of it, but, the writers can stop the show. They might come back. They ask you not to stop the show as a contestant. Like, if there's a problem, there's a compliance person there. There's a standards and practices person there. And if you have a problem, you can call over a contestant coordinator during the break and say, I believe I got the answer right. It was kind of wrong. If you're not happy with their response, they can bring the compliance person over who's essentially acting on your behalf. They can intervene. The writers can stop during taping if they think it's going to affect gameplay. So, so at home, you're always like, Alex says, no, I'm sorry, we can't accept that. And you're like, oh, they solved that, really. The judges, say judges. And it's like, it could be any period of time, of course, while they research the answer and make sure.
So you might be standing there for 5 minutes while they figure it out.
Yeah, and they make you turn around and not look at the game board while it's happening. It might lead you out of the room and take you back to the green room and not talk to any other contestant. Like, they try to be fair. So yeah, it is a very funny thing. And they'll listen to the tape. Like, if there's a question about how someone pronounced something, they will put on headphones and they'll go over and huddle, play it back again and again and again. It's a fair. I mean, that's part of how they get fairness, is that. But well, thank you for doing this episode, Jason.
Yeah, thanks everybody.
Yeah,
this is good. I think we got amazing. A lot of good non-Jeopardy stuff in, which I was hoping.
Right. Plus Glenn's complete tale of Jeopardy.
Yeah.
This way, Glenn, when after your episodes are on, you can say, "Here, I talked about it." You know, let the whole story is in the incomparable. Right. So that's
I remember.
And you can go back and remember it.
Yeah.
Keep it secret. Keep it safe.
Yes, it's a secret now.
All of the details.
I hope I can edit this episode in time to post it.
We'll never speak of this again until October
9th. It never happened.
Right.
Okay. Just making sure.
Send me your files before you burn them.
I'm going to delete my files now so no one will know.
Thanks, guys.